America kwenu?
Yeah.
Indo Jinil Nando Wakwezonu?
Yeah.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Chukun on Soul Captures. Nibanya, Anamikele Unu. I'm Chukun on Soul Captures, aka Mazi. Chakum, aka the Photo Cosmetic Surgeon. And you're tuned into another episode of the Ebo Name of the Day giveaway. So you already know why we do this. We do this to keep our tongues fluid, keep the language alive, and help our brothers and sisters in the diaspora continue to understand their roots. We're gonna give them back the identity that was stolen from them, starting with their names.
I am joined by Chukunonso of Chukunonso Captures. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. So that was a great video. Obviously, got a little sneak peek of your Igbo name of the day. So if you can just start by, we'll just kind of get right into it. If you could let us know a little bit more about yourself, how, you know, all of this started, and just kind of let the viewers and listeners know a little bit more about you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Nkiru. I appreciate you reaching out to me, and really happy to be here. Thank you for that great intro. Hello to all the watchers, all of your audience. And so thank you for this. So a little bit about me. I was born in Nigeria. I came to this country when I was about 3 years old. I live in New York currently. And I do photography, and I am a visual artist, and I like to call myself a Igbo name enthusiast.
Mm.
That's just a little bit about me. I like sharing my culture. I like sharing photography and art with people. And happy to be here, and happy to be here, like, on a platform with people who are interested in African culture. I like what you do. So, yeah.
Thank you, Nonso. I really appreciate that. As you're aware, Building Africa's Future, my podcast, is centered on the experiences of those in a diaspora, primarily from the perspective of millennials. So I'm really excited about our conversation tonight. And if you can just kind of talk a little bit more about, you know, growing up in the Northeast. I know, obviously, you live in New York, you live in Brooklyn particularly. And I know there's a particularly large Nigerian and African diaspora in that area. Mm-hmm. So if you can just kind of share with us, how do you stay connected in that kind of environment? And you know, what are some ways that you like to stay connected? And if you can just kind of talk to us a little bit more about that.
Sure. I stay connected with basically my family. They really did their best. My parents did everything they could to make sure that we understood that Owe Banyishi, right?
Mm-hmm.
From somewhere. That's what they would always tell me.
Right.
So just from events that we would go to, we'd meet other Igbos. I know there was all types of people in people in the African diaspora in Philadelphia. So, you know, there's Ghanaians, there's Liberians, everyone. And
right.
I think each one of them kind of had like their own, you know, town meeting or, you know, things like that. So
right.
That's all connected. I credit my parents for that. And I think there was a second part of that question, but I'm kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you touched on it. So just kind of, because that's a very similar experience that I had as well. Like growing up, our parents made sure that we went to like the different functions in the community. So I guess if you can kind of tie that into, you know, your childhood, obviously, sometimes when you're growing up in a different environment, you don't want to really, that part of your culture is not really that big or important to you. So if you can talk about how that changed or when that changed.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So when you're growing up, you just want to fit in, and you're not really thinking, you don't really have that part. I mean, I think even like from like a medical or scientific standpoint, there's a part of your brain that's physically not even there.
Right.
To like mature and understand the importance of certain things. And so, you know, you're just young, you just want to fit in. You just want to be like everyone else. There's nothing wrong with them. Kind of,
right.
Just from a like a kind of like a almost kind of like a survival standpoint, you just want to be with be like everybody else. So it wasn't easy, you know. It's actually kind of funny because when I first came here, I was in preschool. I remember I was in preschool, and I spoke Igbo, right?
Nice.
I was just learning English.
Right.
Right. And there was this kid, I'll never forget this. My mom, it was lunchtime, everyone else had like these juice boxes and things like that. And my mom packed me a thermos with tea in it. You know, that's what I had, like a little thermos in my lunchbox. With milk in it, you know, just like tradition, like African, Nigeria, you know, I forget, maybe like a sandwich or something like that. Everyone has like juice boxes. It's like the middle of summer. I'm drinking tea and it's like, it's hot. You know what I'm saying? And my friend, I'll never forget, he's looking at me and he's just like, what's that? And like, I knew my parents called it tea.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was the Igbo word for it.
Right.
Even at that young age, I didn't want to get laughed at.
Mm.
So he kept asking me what that was, and I didn't want to say anything because I thought if I said tea, that wasn't the English word for it, and he would start laughing at me. And this kid's like, what is that? And I'm just like, what is that? And I don't say anything. Like, I wanted to say tea, but even at that young age, I was like three. I didn't want to get laughed at. To the point that he's like yelling and he's like shaking me, like, what is that? What is that? And I think eventually he just got tired. And then I don't know, later on I found out that it was called tea. And I was like, oh man, I just told you. You know? And so you know, it's things like that sometimes. But like you just want to fit in. And so I kind of maybe that's why I lost my language for a little bit, that traumatic experience. No, I don't think that's why. I think just with the parent for a while, like my parents were one of the main people who I spoke with, and just after a while, you know, you just kind of stop speaking it as much. I obviously understand it really well, but I think when that changed for me was actually in college. So. In college, and actually kind of ironic, it wasn't even in the beginning, it wasn't really, I think the catalyst wasn't even someone who is African or Igbo, but essentially what happened, so I was in this individual's like friend's room in college, or she was in my room, I can't remember, but we were like talking about class or whatever. We were like in the same class. Her phone rang, right? So her phone rings and she's like, oh, can I take this? It's important, it's my mom. I'm like, yeah, it's cool. She picks up the phone and so she's Venezuelan, so she's speaking Spanish to her mom. And like, when I tell you, like everything about her changed, like her voice inflection, her face lit up, her eyes got brighter. She was just like just talking and just like really expressive. It was like the, I don't know, like the energy in the room almost shifted, you know.
Wow.
I don't know. It's like I noticed little things. Maybe that's why I like photography and like little things about people, when I'm not oblivious and, you know, just in my own ideas and stuff, but when I want to be observant, I'm extremely observant, and everything about her just changed, and I was just like, my goodness, you know. And so she finished up her conversation, and like, so she speaks English, but yeah, she had like a slight accent,
right?
But she was speaking Spanish, and just everything about the way she talked changed, and it was like she became transformed into a completely different person, like right before my eyes. And then she like, you know, like hurried up, ended the phone call or whatever. And like, everything went back to normal. Like, it changed again. Like, I just witnessed another, like, she was a shapeshifter, you know? Like, everything, like, something had come over her, and then it left. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
And I was just like, what? And then, you know, she's like, sorry, it took a while. I was like, it's all good. And we just went back to talking. I didn't tell her that. I was just like, I was just in my head. I was like, yo, that was so cool. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's like you have a superpower, like you're someone else. Like, in my head, I didn't say none of this. But, and I was like, man, like, I wish I could do that.
Right.
I was like, wait, I can do that. You know?
Yeah.
I can, you know? I'm able to if I really, really try, because I'm speaking it as much. And I was like, I can do that. And so I think it was like later on that day, I called my parents and I told them to stop speaking English around me, to like force myself to learn Igbo again. So I started doing that, and it was a rough journey. It was tough trying to express myself again, because I could understand it, but just kind of putting the words together. And I had to get myself to a point where I could think in the language, you know, not just say it, but like my thoughts in my head have to be, like in Igbo. And like, if I want to like code switch, like go from English to Igbo, it's almost like I have to stop my train of thought. If you can imagine like a train of cars, I had to like stop it, translate everything back from a certain point into from English to Igbo, and then let the train start going again, and then so I can kind of like flow like that. And so I was trying to make sure that my thoughts were in Igbo, and to think in the language, not just speak in it, because then it would come out, you know, speech. And I remember the one day that I had a breakthrough, because my parents were kind of laughing at me sometimes, and they were trying to, you know, I was struggling through it, but they were supportive. And sometimes they were confused as to what I was saying, but, you know, I got there. And stutter through certain words, but the day when I realized I was getting somewhere was when I had a dream in all Igbo one night.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and I was just like, okay, I'm getting somewhere. I never expected that. It was like, it was a weird dream. It was like my grandma, and we were like on this farm, and everything was like, it was like a video game. Everything was like bright colored and all of this stuff. And she was like, it was weird, but the point is I was speaking Igbo.
When you do, I guess, connect with people back home, do you speak the language to them, or how? Because I know they're a little bit more intense. Like, they make fun of you. They definitely laugh at you.
No, sometimes. I mean, I'm better now. I'm not perfect by any means, but sometimes I think they're just gassing me up, because they're just like, "Wow, your pronunciation and everything." It's like
nice.
I'm just like, get out of here. You know, I hear it from enough people who are separated enough, I guess. They're not like, I guess, coordinating, trying to make me feel better.
Right.
You know, they don't really talk as much, different sides of the family. And yeah, they say that, you know, that it's good. But I think that's when that was like the first part of it. And then where I kind of re-immersed myself. And then like the second part of that was there was this other individual that I met through in college, African Student Association. And she put me up on like a lot of Afrobeat music. Like, she showed me a website.
Nice.
Where they were all on. And this was like around maybe like, I could be wrong, maybe like around 2009-ish, when like Afrobeats really started becoming a little bit more mainstream in the US. A lot of people didn't really know about it. I don't know if it's 2009. If anyone who's watching knows like the exact date or whatever and they followed it, you could please put that in the comment section below. But it was like when, you know,
like P-Square?
And yeah, WizKid first came out, M.I., Nato C. And I was just like, man, you know, listening to Flavor and like a bunch of other artists and stuff like that, and just hearing, I mean, I'd always heard like music, like high life music,
right,
and stuff like that, like gospel music and just kind of like stuff like that from my parents in Ibo. But this is the first time that I'm hearing, like, you know, like hip hop and R&B type vibes, or,
right,
and basically in the music and like listening to songs in Ibo, like, kind of helped me, like, just get more fluent, learn new words, understand, just put concepts together and stuff. So that was kind of like the second part of it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I agree with you. I think Flavor, I always say he really, like, put Igbo music on the map. Like, first of all, singing in Igbo, and then his slang, like, just really incorporating the language in a very beautiful and powerful way. Like, I give him so much credit for that. Music, you know, speaking of Igbo.
Yeah, and I was going to say, music is a very powerful thing. It'll really get you there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I was going to say, you know, obviously, speaking of Igbo, kind of going back to the Igbo name of the day, if you can just kind of tell us a little bit more about how that started for you. I know you spoke about the importance of language and how, you know, your friends or people that you connected with, they kind of inspired that in you. So if you can tell us a little bit more about, you know, how Igbo Day, Name of the Day, got started, how you choose the names, like what kind of influences you use to choose the names. And then if you can, if you have any background in this, if you can talk more about your understanding of Igbo naming traditions.
Sure. It started out, you know, I'm on Instagram, I'm, you know, posting pictures, interacting with people, and I'm trying to think of exactly what inspired it. But I think in general, a lot of the people who I was friends with and everything like that on social media, they're Igbo. And names have always been, they've always kind of fascinated me. I'm not sure why, but they've always kind of fascinated me. And I know our names just carry so much meaning. And basically, like, you were speaking before about people being connected to the cultures. Like, you can always tell where someone's from if they have that name. I mean, there's certain people who they're very in touch with their culture, and, you know, they say their name and you can hear the accent, like they're saying something in our language. And there's some people who might not be so much connected with it, but you can always tell where someone's from. You know, sometimes people ask me, how can you tell, like, someone who's not Igbo, someone who's American, like, how can you tell what tribe someone's from? And I'm just like, well, if I can understand what their name means, like, if it's a word that I know and I can say that I know that they're from my tribe, they're like, oh, okay, I get it, but I don't get it. And so I've always been interested in names and their meaning, and that's a good place to start for people who want to become more fluent with it, because you know you obviously know your name, so that's the first place to start, knowing the meaning of your name, the root words and things like that, what it means, and then it can help as a building block to understand other names. And I think in general, I think I just started it out one day. I can't remember exactly. I think it just came to me, and I started highlighting people's names and explaining to people what their names mean. Because I've always been about fusing different elements of art together. That's like my passion. So culture and art and things like that. It started off as that, just kind of like highlighting people's names. It might have even been a client that I had who was Igbo or something. And, you know, I just wanted people to, like, understand what our names mean. And I'm always about fusing different elements of art together to kind of create something better, so it's not just photography or something. And it got to the point where, you know, I'm highlighting people's names, Igbo people's names, and I'm just like, you know what? I don't want anyone to feel left out, because I know there's Americans, there's all different types of people on my social media, so let me include other people. I don't want them to feel like I'm just exclusive, or I'm just exclusively, I only favor certain types of people. So I was like, but I don't know how to involve them. I don't even know if they would care. And I was just like, well, you know what? And I think this is around the the whole like year of return maybe.
Okay.
You know, Black Panther thing, and I was like, I'm seeing a lot of interest in African Americans trying to understand where they come from. I'm like, you know what? Maybe they would like to, and everyone's doing, you know, DNA testing to know where they came from. Like, maybe people would like, African Americans would like to know who identified they were Nigerian. They would like to know where they, if they had a name to have something to connect. Because they might have a name that they might know the meaning, but they know that they might not be aware of the actual the name that they would have had if they were from Igbo land or somewhere else.
Right.
So I said, you know what? I want to share this with people. And so I added another series. It wasn't just Igbo Name of the Day. I started doing Igbo Name of the Day giveaway, where I just asked people. They gave me like their name, so to answer your question about how the names are given, like your name, any like events that happened around your birth that your parents might have been inspired by, your relationship with God, their relationship with God, how people would describe you, maybe things that your parents wanted to speak or manifest into your life and things like that. A lot of that just kind of goes into the name or things like that. And so I kind of gave it a little bit more of a generic spin, because when I ask certain people, they might not know the answer to all these questions. So I kind of asked them, you know, how would your friends and family describe you and things like that? Because there might not be an event going on in their parents' life that inspired their name or their relationship with God or something like that. Like that example you gave, Nkolika. So I think she listed a few things about herself, and one of the themes that kept coming up over and over again was communicating with people, being involved in the community, being like an activist and things like that. So that's why I gave her that name.
Nice. So you actually brought up a really good point. So you mentioned how like with Black Panther, Year of the Return, all these different things that kind of brought up this interest or this renewed interest, you know, African ancestry, DNA test, stuff like that. So one common trend or theme that a lot of us in the diaspora experience growing up is, you know, not being looked at as cool or interesting or whatever, but kind of like this somehow, you know, renewed interest. Because like, I think now, because we are appreciating our culture, now others are also interested as well. So I think a lot of people, they kind of feel, oh, well, you know, you weren't rocking with us before, so why do you want to be cool with us now? Like, how do you address people who feel that way?
How do I address Africans who feel that way or African Americans who feel that way?
Africans who feel like, why are African Americans trying to,
I see. I mean, I can only really speak to what I've done. I can understand what they're talking about because I went through it too. And everyone has a right to feel, you know, how they feel. For me, essentially, I've had, it's like I've almost had like multiple, multiple identities, you know, growing up, because around my parents and family, friends and everything, I'm Igbo. to everyone else, you know, they see the color of my skin and I'm just Black, so I've had to have to be like that. And then, you know, in school and certain places, like we're a minority in this country, you know, so you kind of have to code switch there too. And, you know, basically have that identity, as some people call it, you know, not being as Black as you could, but, you know, so it's like I've had to relate to a bunch of different types of people, experiences in my life.
Right.
So, Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question. It's a good question. I would say to them, just be open. You have every right to be to feel upset, but just know that if you kind of close yourself off completely to people, you might miss out on opportunities. And you know, they were kind of told that. Like, I don't think a lot of that came from them. You know what I'm saying? They were kind of told that there was no value in their culture. That was kind of by design, okay. You know? So it's like, I think just to put that into account too, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, just kind of go to the next topic. So for many of us as millennials growing up in a diaspora, we don't have a strong connection to our culture. And what I mean by that is like the folklore, the reasons why certain things are done, like certain traditions, and of course the language piece, because as you mentioned correctly earlier, when you come here, even if you're speaking your native tongue, once you go into the school system, first of all, there's just so many like factors that try to push you away from learning or keeping that part of your language. And then your natural reaction, even at that young age, you still felt there's some level of, you know, I might get picked on even though I'm 4 or 5 or, you know, whatever age you were at that time. So there's that recognition of there's some kind of difference. And I think that's what pushes us away from, you know, our cultures and our heritage until we, you know, kind of, I think most people, once they get in college or graduate from college, that's when they kind of realize, hey, you know, there's this other part of me that I need to appreciate. I think that's a common trend, and I'm happy that you brought that up, because with the, I'll say among Gen Z, I will say there's more of a disconnect, or at least maybe the ones that I've kind of seen when it comes to culture. But on the other hand, I am actually seeing a lot of them as early as, you know, high school. I guess a lot of them are like high school age or maybe early college, and you know, like on TikTok and Instagram. They're the ones who are, a lot of them are the content creators for, you know, a lot of these like African centered kinds of things that are, you know, we all enjoy and stuff like that. So I will say, you know, social media obviously has a significant role in our lives. That's how you and I connected. And that's how, you know, we connect with so many people across the world and just to get our information. But just to kind of go back to the names, I know that's one way that we definitely connect to our culture. You know, like my name in Kiruka, my dad named me that because he envisioned a greater future for me. And then like the same for my siblings, you know, depending on like the birth order, like my sister, the third one, her name is Obianeju, which of course, you know, means the one that came in plenty. So I love that you mentioned that. So just kind of in light of that, can you talk more about being intentional about making people say your name correctly? Because I know that's obviously an issue that we all kind of face when you try to correct people. Again, kind of growing up, they don't want to acknowledge that your name is like, for them, it's like, okay, that's not a big, that's not important to me, but your name is a significant identity marker to your heritage, your people, your history. And it's just, it's you. It's, you know, calling me or calling someone else anything that's not their name is disrespectful. It's kind of diminishes who they are. There's this powerful quote that I read sometime in the past that like calling someone's name kind of ignites something within their spirit. Like it's powerful, like calling someone by their name. And I think you mentioned it earlier, like when people say your name and then like when they say it correctly, especially with our kinds of names, it almost kind of triggers something in your head like, oh wow, you said my name correctly. Like it's almost surprising. And then, you know, because then you're able to connect in a different way, especially when they're from your, you know, your ethnic group or from your country or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you can just talk more about being intentional about people saying your name, your full name correctly. Mm-hmm. And at what point did this happen for you? Like making sure people say your name correctly, and you can talk about childhood and things like that.
Yeah. Great topics. Glad you asked. Wow. You gave me a lot. So if I forget anything, please remind me. But calling someone's name is very important. There was this one, I saw this YouTube video that they were talking about how when you call in Igbo culture, when you're calling that person's name, you're not just calling them, you're calling the spirit of God in their life. And as you, every time you call them, you're blessing them. Every time you call them, every time you say Ngiruka, I'm speaking blessing into your life. Just when they call your name. So it's like a very kind of like built-in efficient way for us to progress, no matter who we are, no matter where we are, if you're connected with your culture. And I'm also helping that I can bring blessing into the lives of anyone who I give a name, you know? So whatever they tell me, I'm speaking that into their lives over and over again. I'm saying, you know, your future is better over and over again. The future is best, you know, and your future is going to be amazing. Just think about that concept. Whenever someone, they're not saying your name, they're saying, they're blessing you every time they say your name, you know? But I mean, there's names like that in English, like hope and grace and faith that are actually, you know, just words and stuff like that. So, that's probably a name for that concept, it's etymology. I could be wrong. Probably, I might be saying that wrong, but yeah, so that's important. Quick anecdote. So I had a family member who in the UK who married outside of the Igbo cultures. I think it was someone who was, they were Caucasian, and they had kids. And I think they had like three kids, and the first child got an Igbo middle name. I don't think it was official, like on their birth certificate or anything. It's just something they called them. And the other two said, you know, hey, I want an Igbo name too. You know what I'm saying? Like they felt left out because certain family members would call them by their name. They wanted to feel special too. But I think it's interesting that kids at that age understand what it means to have like another, almost kind of like another part of yourself or another identity or something that connects you with someone else and like, you know, the power in that. So I always thought that was really interesting. But yeah, so it's whenever you're calling your names, someone's calling your name, they're calling blessing into your life. And so when it comes to, I think you said something about, oh yeah, so there was a video on like Instagram a while back, and so you're talking about having people say my name and things like that. Yeah, it looks intimidating when you break it down. It's really not that hard. It's not, I mean, there's certain names where I could see someone would be like, oh, this is intimidating. Like, you know, if you can't, like if you've never seen an N and a K next to each other, you'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have that, the I don't know, just like the ability. I mean, there's certain words in like, I don't know, like Chinese or things like
right.
that. As you're developing, there's kind of like muscles and whatever in your throat or your tongue that allow you to say certain, make certain sounds. So not everyone can say it. To say Ngiru, right? They can't always make that sound. So I can understand that, but you know, to say Chukunonso is, you know, it looks intimidating, but I always challenge people to try to say it. Because, especially if they're in the diaspora, because it's like, why not?
Right.
Why not try? You might find that it's really not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of that is there was this video going around a while back, and I think it was that one of the actresses from Orange is the New Black.
Yep, I was going to mention that too. Yep.
Yeah, and her name is
Uzo.
Zamaka.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think she played Crazy Eyes, I think, or one of the characters on there. And I could be wrong about that. Let me know.
You're right.
Section. Yeah. Okay. So, and you guys probably know the video. She said one day she asked her mom, can you call me Zoe? I think it was like Zoe instead. And her mom was like, why? And she was like, she said something like, I don't know, just be easier. And, you know, what she said was so true. Her mom said, you know, if they can learn to pronounce Michelangelo, and Dolph Chayefsky. They can learn to pronounce Uzamaka. And that, it just blew my mind, because I'm just like, those are complex names that are not necessarily American. They're not very common. Mm-hmm. So why is it an issue when it comes to African complex names?
Right.
If long or, you know, look intimidating. So I challenge people to be able to say all complex names, because we live in a melting pot of a country. And so nothing against any type of complex name or any culture, just treat everyone fairly. So I mean, when I had a question about what you were saying about Gen Z, do you see that they're not as I want to understand what you mean. You're saying that they're on social media and all those, well, you're seeing some on like social media, but is there something you're missing? Like where are you seeing it like missing?
Well, for me, and again, I will say it could just be the ones that I've interacted with.
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, for us, a lot of times our parents didn't really speak our languages to us. Some, you know, like our parents, they were intentional about taking us to functions and stuff like that. Yeah. But I think with the parents of, you know, Gen Z kids, young people, I don't really see that same level of, or at least maybe again, I'm not a Gen Z, so I don't really know their lived experiences. But I, just from kind of the parents, I would say I don't see that same level of, you know, speak. I mean, it's almost like the language just kind of gets diminished as each generation goes on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know for many Igbo scholars and, you know, Igbo enthusiasts, a lot of them are really concerned. So I am happy that, you know, obviously there's so many more resources now online and, you know, books and everything where people can kind of learn the language. I'm, you know, I am happy to see them at least engaging, at least like on social media, like with like funny skits. You know, of course, it's more of making jokes of African parents, but
within
those jokes, there's still some level of, you know, you understand culture enough to make those kind of remarks.
Exactly. I think that's great. Humor is great. It's, you know, it's like trick people into learning something or whatever, you know, edutainment. It's, that's good. I mean, the future is where we, you know, as a society, we have to focus. But yeah, I mean, maybe it is social media. I have seen that. Maybe the viewers, maybe your audience can put in the comment section below, what's the best way to connect with the future? Is it, you know, TikTok and Snapchat and things like that? What's been your experiences, right? You guys can let us know what's a good way to reach them on the platforms like Gen Z and stuff. I think, like you said, since you're bringing this part up, I think, that might be important to engage them. But like the language part, I know that there is a, I think it was in Oxford University, they started like the first Igbo class. I'm not sure if you heard about that.
I've seen that.
Yeah, so that's, I think that was great. That was amazing. I mean, kind of like me, I mean, watching Nollywood movies.
Oh yeah.
Those on there help. The comedy
ones. Oh yeah.
listening to music, like you said, listening to flavor. Mm-hmm. I would encourage everyone to do that, because that's an easy way to learn. If you're not the type of person who wants to take a class necessarily.
Right.
Learn that way. And that way you're not kind of like learning, but it's contextual. You're learning colloquialisms and stuff. You're seeing what's going on, and you're able to relate it to your own life, and it becomes a little bit easier.
Right. And also, there's one thing that I have noticed, even, you know, with our own upbringings, a lot of times African parents, not just Nigerian, I'm sure others too, but, you know, obviously we're coming from that cultural context. There's this weird fear or concern that if I teach my kids Igbo or whatever my, whatever the language is, they're going to have an accent and they're going to have issues in school. And that's a very unfortunate way of thinking. I've discussed with Igbo teachers on my podcast before, and we kind of say the same thing. That's a very unfortunate way of thinking, because the funny thing is the parents, they obviously have the language. Some of them, they don't have a very strong command either, because maybe they grew up in Lagos. That's a whole other conversation, like For some reason, those who grew up in Lagos, they don't really have a good command of the language. So, of course, it's worse when they don't have a strong command of the language and they come here and have kids and they don't teach the kids the language because of whatever their reasons may be.
Yeah.
So it's a really deep concern. And I always think about like the future, because if we don't have a strong command of the language now, how can we pass it on? But, you know.
That's very true. It's hard. I know. I always try to put myself in my parents' shoes with Westernization and colonization. And it's just
right.
That a new paradigm, a new way of operating. And to now associate, I guess, everything that you're seeing, Western America, all that stuff, with affluence, and then you literally see everything around you begin to deteriorate. So you associate that with something that's bad. And like you said, we can kind of go into politics and all the other stuff. I don't know into that, but there was a reason for that. But it's unfortunate. And I think our parents in their desire to want the best for their kids, and they might not have understood, some of them might not have understood how important this is. And, you know, they might not have known that children can learn 5 different languages
right.
with the accent at a certain time. And
mm-hmm.
all they're focused on, because I've seen videos that you, some of your past videos, all their focus is in our success. You know,
right.
it's like by any means necessary, you know, like that's why they don't want anything to get into the way. You know, they didn't struggle in Nigeria to come over here for something like an accent to be the one thing that's not spoken. See, you know what I mean? A certain language around you. I mean, my dad said he wasn't going to speak. He wasn't going to. That was actually his. Very interesting way of putting it. I don't know if he thought about it this way, but he actually did not want, in the beginning, he did not want to speak English around me. He wanted me to learn English from others. So we only
nice.
Spoke Igbo with me. And I don't know if he had that foresight, but I think it was more so him wanting to keep me in the culture.
And then me
learning English, he just knew I would do that just naturally. Like,
said. Right.
But
right.
I get what you're saying, like, because children will pick things up if you speak English to them with an accent, they might, but then it's kind of weird, because I see parents of like other cultures, they'll be Chinese or Spanish or whatever, they'll speak with an accent, the parents will, but the kid, if they're like watching a cartoon or
exactly
school, they will speak perfect English and they won't have an accent at all.
But right.
I think I can understand that fear, if maybe our parents came here and they were discriminated against and they were just like, oh, it's because you can tell because of my accent. How would I know? To have an accent. And like they say, hindsight is 20/20. We could all look back now and say like, wow, you know, but they didn't know, you know, I think a lot of them didn't know, and they did, I think they had their best, but they tried their best. But again, you know, accountability needs to be there, and no one's perfect, but I think it's on us to, whether it's through, that's what I'm trying to do through Igbo Name of the Day, watching Nollywood movies, watching, you know, whatever. And there's this page that followed me, and I think her name is like Akata Motibo or something like that.
That's my friend.
yeah she was telling me about that, and I think she's African-American, and she was telling
yeah
me, and it's really interesting that she learned it herself,
right?
For the viewers, I got that is not really a good thing to call somebody, but basically she's saying that, you know, she's learning Igbo, but it's really interesting and funny how she kind of like turned an insult into something
right.
like, you know, I'm going to connect to my culture. I'm not going to just be this this person who is lost. I refuse
right.
to. So that was very admirable. And yeah, I think there's definitely a fear or a concern, I should say, of the language dying out, and we just have to do what we can to keep it alive, whether it's through just these funny skits that you're talking about or about our parents or something, you know, at least amalgamated into English, if I'm even using that word correctly. Let's get an Igbo word in the dictionary.
Yes, yes, yes.
By 2050, let's get one Igbo word in the dictionary. So, because English is already a melting pot of
different right.
languages, so I think we can do it.
So actually, no. So you actually inspired like two questions, and I want to see if I can spit them out before I forget.
Yeah.
So the first one is like with this kind of mimicking of culture, like we can do that all day, make fun of our parents' accents or funny things they did growing up and make as many skits as possible.
They have no clue.
But what about like our future kids? Like, are they going to be able to make fun of us? Because I feel like that's that cultural disconnect that I always think about and get concerned. That's the first question. The second question, I've seen so many like Igbo athletes, maybe they're mixed, more than like most of them are mixed. Maybe they have a white parent or an whatever the case may be. And naturally there's going to be a disconnect, one, growing up in a diaspora, to having a, you know, coming from a multiracial or multicultural home. So it's so painful hearing them say their names, for them to say their own names incorrectly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, oh my gosh, if you can't say your own name right, then I don't know. Like, that's like the first step to, I don't know. So I don't know if you can kind of give some quick feedback about that before we go into your photography.
Sure. Good questions. So the first one, are they going to be able to make fun of us and our act? I would hope so. I mean, I love comedy. I mean, there's one comedian named Josh Too Funny, and his stuff is like hilarious. He has a huge following. I would hope so. I mean, I try to be lighthearted. I don't know if I would. I mean, like, I might say some people say my accent comes out if I have one. I don't know. Maybe I do. When I'm angry or whatever, but I hope they'd be able to make fun of us. I hope they always say you wind up turning into your parents. So maybe there's some quirks that we'll right. have. But that's a really interesting question that you had. Are they going to be able to make fun of us? That is That is my goal. If that is the mark of good Igbo parenting, is will your children make fun of the things you put them through and your mindset? That is the goal. Thank you for giving me that. I don't have a good answer for that, but I'm gonna make sure to embarrass my children on a daily basis. Drop them off from school. I'm going to yell so many things from the car door. I'm going to make sure that their friends look forward to me picking them up from school. Whenever I pick them up, I don't know if they're going to have hologram cell phones at that time. Everyone's going to come out. They'll be like, oh, watch this. Like, they're picking it now. I'm like, yo, watch. You know, everyone's going to be, cold. But yeah, I hope they can make fun of us. Yeah, but like, because I think what you're saying is like, at least they were so into their culture that there was some residual there that we can make fun of. It's kind of like the lane effect.
Right.
We have to be strong enough in ours so that they pick up something. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to pick up anything at all.
Right. Right.
And there was another question about not being able to frame correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's just more of like cultural preservation is something that I'm really, like, it concerns me because I mean, at least the people who are back home, obviously they are in an environment that they can walk down the street and pretty much see or hear the language being spoken or seeing their culture going to the village, you know, their township or whatever. Mm-hmm. But for us, being that we're so many thousands or whatever miles removed, and then, you know, for both you and I, we don't go home as often and maybe don't connect with people back home. Of course, we may have our groups here, but obviously they're Americanized for the most part versus those who are back home who are still very much, you know, in the culture and can connect with the culture in a deeper way than we can without even really trying to. For us, I feel like we have to be very intentional about it. So it's just a concern, like even with people saying their names incorrectly, or you know, of course we've been guilty of it many times. Even allowing people to say our names incorrectly, we just kind of let them, you know, just call me this. I mean, I don't typically do that. I don't do that now, especially not now. But in the past, like, people would ask, oh, can I just call you Nikki? I'm just going to call you this. And it's like, no. But, you know, because, like, as you mentioned earlier, because you're in this environment and you want to fit in as much as possible, not try to create too much, like, you know, whatever. So you just kind of go on with it and not just let people call you whatever it is. So I think, again, going back to you being intentional about people calling you Chukunon, so I think it's powerful because, again, it forces them to go out of their own comfort zones. Mm. It teaches them some level of someone else's culture. And also, like you said, it's a blessing over your own life. Like, it's speaking something into your life. So, I mean, we don't have to talk about that too much, but I just wanted to get that out there.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with addressing that really quick if you're okay with that. So it's, it's definitely going to be a process. I think it's good to incentivize people. You know, like you said, it's cool now to be.
Right.
You know, or you can find a comedian or something. So I think as long as someone finds someone they can connect with, then they might become more interested in learning how to pronounce their name properly, because there's a lot of power in a name. The reason why I give names is because of the power and their meaning. It's almost like you were giving a divine assignment from God through your parents, right? And I give people these names to share my culture and inspire them. So it's like, this is your divine assignment. And it's like, if the people who I can give these names to, if they can think of themselves as almost kind of like a superhero, you know, starring them. If you can think of some of these heroes, they're called to a purpose, right? And they might think that purpose is challenging in the beginning, or they might even reject it in the beginning, and they want to have nothing to do with it. But as much as they run away, that purpose always follows them, you know? So if you're struggling with something in your life, you want to accomplish a certain goal, and you ask me for an Igbo name, I'm going to try my best to give you a name that's going to speak some type of blessing into your situation. So it's like your divine assignment now. So no matter how far, if you have a setback in your life or anything like that, that thing will always follow you, just like that hero in a movie, and their purpose eventually wins them over. You know what I'm saying? Or they step into their purpose and it leads them into greatness.
I love that. I love that. So I mean, I definitely want to talk about your photography, because obviously that's a really big part of, you know, how all of this got started. So I know, you know, again, the African upbringing, anything that is not related to STEM, essentially, or STEAM. Well, STEAM, actually, that's included. You know, is always looked at like, oh, you know, that's just a hobby. That's not something that you need to focus on. Excuse me. So if you can just kind of like tell us a little bit more about your journey, like, into photography, you know, how it started, maybe how your parents received it when you, like, were kind of getting into it. Yeah. I mean, of course, I know now, you know, all these, like, artsy kind of things, our parents are seeing that there's clearly value in it, because money can be made and people can connect with you and, you know, reach out to you and, you know, hire you essentially for your services. Yeah. So if you can just kind of talk about that part, as well as, you know, the connection to the culture, like how your photography relates to connecting to the culture. And then also, if you can tell us about what you've learned about yourself in the process.
Yeah, it's really good questions. Wow, they need to get you your own talk show. It's you've been watching a lot of, I don't know, pointers, maybe just a natural gift. I don't know.
Thank you.
Ruka. All right. Our parents, they want the best for us. And, I see you have my page up. So they want the best for us. And I think they want us to try to do something practical. So that's what I try to do. And they didn't receive it well at first, you know?
Of course.
But... you know, I sacrificed, and I am now I'm in a place where I can pursue this, you know,
right,
photography and stuff like that. So I would advise people of that, because, or just be aware that, you know, if you're in the diaspora, our parents are essentially just doing what they can to try and, you know, to try and provide us with a better life. And so since you're on like my page, are you able to hit the back button really quick? I could just show you a little bit of, I could probably just talk to you. Okay, yeah, so here's a lot of the albums and the things that I've done. And it kind of chronicles like a journey towards the bottom of the page of my photography. You know what I'm saying?
Go to the bottom?
Yeah, if you were to scroll to the bottom, you could probably kind of like see my development as a photographer in chapters. Okay, wow. Let's get started. So I kind of like all the shoots that I do, I make albums for it. Of course, I give the clients the pictures, and then I kind of make chapters as they go along, and you know, just feature people and connect and things like that. But I think, yeah, it is difficult to get to a point where, I guess you can look at the beginning, if you hit back, and then it's the first one, and then like almost the middle of the page, then you can see chapter one.
Okay.
Everything at the top is just kind of...
like different events?
Yeah, and stuff like that. Okay, yeah, that's around where it starts. Okay, yeah, chapter one. So, yeah, so these are like just little things that I kind of just started off doing a lot of them.
There's such a baby here.
Yeah, like, different. So, and you know, just doing nature photography, but I've always been into art and things like that. And there was another question you asked. What was that about? I think I covered the first part about just being in STEM and things like that. I mean, I'm in one of the pre-approved fields. I kind of took care of that. Everyone might have their own separate journey to kind of make their parents proud in their own way. Or maybe they can go straight for this. And really, everyone has their separate journey. They can go straight to doing whatever they're passionate about.
Right.
It's just that our parents' mindset is that when they were growing up, there was no Instagram. There was no social media. They don't. Someone who did photography was really not thriving, you know,
went
away. So for them to make that connection that like you can make money through ad dollars or through other things, or through, you can actually scale a business, you can sell courses and things like that. There was nothing like that back then, you know?
Right.
So that's where they're coming from. So I would advise people to just understand that that's where they're coming from. So if you can, I guess, just find your own way to address that, I guess, fear that they have, you know, wanting to, striving to come here, and then, you know, you just not really doing what they want. But again, that's like case by case, handled by that. But in terms of, I hope I'm answering everything you said, but essentially it's, for me, I try to kind of mix like meaning into the photography. So this is my camera here. This is Ifunanya, right? So I named her, right? So Ifunanya means love, and Igbo. And, The literal translation for that is like Ifunanya means to see with your eyes, right? So I say this is, and cameras have lenses like eyes, right? The lens is like an eye. So that's the eye that lets me see the world, and this is also the eye that lets the world see me. So
it's powerful.
And Igbo is Inyawa Nyamjawa Borokwa. And so that's what I kind of like to share with people, that you can kind of create these connections and dual meanings between a lot of things in the world, in And so it's kind of like my way of also kind of teaching people Igbo and kind of sprinkling that into things.
Right.
And yeah, so
I love that. It's inspirational. So then, so like for me personally, I consider myself somewhat of a historian.
Yeah.
Even with the podcast, it's my way of documenting people's stories. You know, I've actually interviewed my mom before, so
That
was like when I first started with the podcast. So of course, you know, it was awkward for her and awkward for me, but I think we don't sit around with our elders enough and hear their stories and even take them back to their own childhoods. Because I literally asked her, you know, Mom, can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, how things were when you grew up? What are some things you remember about life growing up in Nigeria? And what are some things that you remember about when you first came to the country? So for me, documenting our history through this podcast, through these conversations, even through pictures, I love, of course, I'm not as great as you at your art, but I, you know, at my phone, I have like almost 8,000 photos. I'm always like documenting, you know, special moments. So that's extremely important to me. Because as we know, like even when you look at, you know, pictures of our grandparents or, you know, our forefathers and foremothers, like just kind of seeing those images, you know, obviously they typically don't smile in those photos.
Yeah.
Many of them say nothing was funny. So nothing to smile about. But I think just kind of seeing them in their youth, you know, for those who have passed, seeing them when they were still around, just trying to imagine, you know, how life was for them, what the world was like through their lens, as you mentioned, like with your camera. So I just think it's beautiful. And I'm really thankful, you know, to even have this conversation with you. Thanks for like all the insight and everything that you shared. And, you know, it's a great discussion. So, you know, as we round up, if you have any, I guess, words of inspiration to either those who might want to get into photography. I know you mentioned a little bit, but any words of encouragement for those who are aspiring photographers or those who want to learn Igbo, or just anything you'd like to say to the listeners and the viewers and how they can connect with you for your services or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Thank you. Thank you for all that. You are a great host. I like the way you tied all this up. Great interviewer. So thank you again for this opportunity. And yeah, I mean, photography is a cyclical journey. It's a lifelong journey. I think it's best to do this because you want to make smiles and help people. It's going to take a while. I mean, thank you for your compliments, but you know, I'm going to definitely try to take them as a person who always wants to continually improve.
Right.
I do appreciate that. I was very flattered by what you said. And I think that if someone's into art, photography, anything like that, try your best to... YouTube is great. Try your best to study light. Start off with a small, you know, affordable camera. I recommend Nikons because they kind of lay all the buttons out easier and things like that than other. I've tried other camera brands and, you know, they're good as well too, but I kind of, you know, have purchased a bunch of equipment, so now it's kind of like a little difficult to switch brands, but like so I'm I guess I'm a little bit biased there, but either way, learning Igbo is also this I would just tell people to, you can start off with a name. You can hit me up for an Igbo name. You can start off with your name if you are already Igbo. Try to understand what your name means. Work towards maybe find someone who you can speak Igbo with, maybe a parent or maybe someone in Nigeria, watch Nollywood movies. Find something that makes you, for me, it's like, you know, comedy or something like that. Find something that makes you want to learn it. That way it doesn't seem like a chore, you know?
Right.
So, because if it doesn't seem like a chore to you, then you'll always want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so you guys can find me everywhere. It's Chukwu Soul Captures on Twitter. It's Chukwu_1, but Facebook, Chukwu Soul Captures, Instagram, TikTok, basically on every single platform, YouTube as well too. Just started a YouTube channel a few months ago, and you know, just putting, speaking of photographers, putting a lot of tutorials and stuff on there. Everything that I've learned all throughout the years, I'm always learning new concepts. There's always new technology that comes out,
and right,
new techniques. So you're never like the best photographers. So many other photographers out there who are, I think, are way better than me. I'm always inspired and awed and humbled all the time by what they're able to do. And I just want to be able to get to that stage, well, not get to that stage, but get to a point where the journey, the cyclical journey, is a little bit more, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but you know, so I would just encourage people to just stick with it. It's worth it. It's worth the journey.
Right.
Yeah, the destination is born. The journey is where it's at.
Thank you so much, Lento. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you. All right.